Okay, and our final speaker is Stephanie Oddie, who will talk about intrinsic properties control gamma frequency input integration.
Okay. Hi, my name is Stephanie Oddie, and I am a graduate student in Ed Calloway's lab. And I'll be talking about research that was supported by the Kavli Foundation, entitled Intrinsic Properties that Control Gamma Frequency Integration. So like you, we're interested in cognition and attention, and like you, we're interested in neuronal synchronization. We're just studying it at a lower level. We're studying how it happens, how the connections between neurons, the anatomical and morphological specialization of neurons, and the expression of channels and proteins interact to let cells synchronize their activity and give rise to this oscillatory phenomenon. Synchronization of neuronal activity in the gamma frequency range is of particular interest to us because it's related to several cognitive functions, such as working memory maintenance, sensory motor integration, attentional selection, and memory retrieval. And it's disrupted in disorders of attention and cognition, including schizophrenia, epilepsy, and ADHD. Therefore, understanding gamma oscillations may be able to tell us something interesting and detailed about how we think and give us relevant targets for disease. So how can we put all these levels together to understand this emergent phenomenon? We're not likely to understand it by studying one protein or one cell or one connection or the gross activity of one network. However, biology is quantitative enough that we can get data from any one of these levels and generate hypotheses that are specific and quantitative enough that we can work through them in an explicit model. We can then compare the model results back to our data and use any discrepancies to refine our hypothesis and inspire new experiments. And we can do this across levels of study. For instance, we can work in relatively realistic conditions to identify a specific phenomenon. We can move down to more reduced conditions, collect data, and then move through our experimental and computational loop until we develop a new hypothesis to test on a different level. For instance, we may be able to identify interesting ion channels in neurons that may be important for gamma oscillations. And then we can move to the protein level to be able to use genetic or viral techniques to manipulate those ion channels and see how it affects the activity of an individual neuron or the connections between neurons or the activity of the local network or the emergence of gamma. And so this has been our basic approach. For instance, we know that when the cortex is doing this, individual neurons are receiving input that looks like this. So the neuron is receiving both phasic, excitatory, and inhibitory input. The inhibitory input, though, is larger in amplitude, and it actually correlates better with the gamma activity recorded with extracellular electrodes. So we would like to know what input like this does to this neuron, or this neuron, or this neuron. Leaving aside any differences of where these cells sit in the network, how would their responsiveness be different just because of who they are intrinsically, because of their shape or their electrical properties? And so we can answer this question by simulating gamma frequency input to individual cells, and we can do this with dynamic clamp. So the process involves recording from a neuron, hooking the recording amplifier up to a computer, and using the computer to simulate ionic or synaptic conductance to neurons in real time. So we can simulate the connections between neurons, or we can simulate ion channels in neurons. In this case, we're simulating the synaptic input that the cell receives during gamma oscillations. However, we're controlling the structure of the input, so we can see how increasing or decreasing the amplitude of the gamma input affects the responsiveness of neurons. Okay, so we recorded from neurons and simulated gamma input with dynamic lamp, and then collected data from a variety of neuronal types, and we found that neurons do indeed respond differently to gamma input. Some neurons gradually increase their spike rate as the amount of gamma input increases. Other neurons quickly change from not firing at all to firing on every cycle of gamma, while other neurons are completely unresponsive to increases in gamma input. So next, we hypothesize that the difference between these two types may be due to a difference in their intrinsic periodicity. And so we moved to our model to test this hypothesis, and we found that a model neuron with no after hyperpolarization conductance, the AHP conductance, exhibited the sigmoidal input-output relationship similar to this neuron. The after hyperpolarization conductance is just a conductance that will turn on after the cell spikes and keeps the cell hyperpolarized for a set time. And if you add this hyperpolarization conductance into a model neuron, the neuron will now exhibit this graded profile response similar to this neuron. So this suggests that the difference between these two neurons may be due to a difference in their after hyperpolarization conductance or duration. So we can compare this back to our data, and we find that neurons that exhibit this sigmoidal input-output relationship have a really short after hyperpolarization duration, while neurons with a really long after hyperpolarization duration exhibit this graded response. Okay, so next we asked if we increase the amount of AHP conductance in a neuron, can we change its response profile from sigmoidal to graded? And we can do this with dynamic clamp. So we can simulate both the synaptic input the cell receives during gamma oscillations, and we can simulate an AHP conductance in that neuron. And we can ask, how is the neuron's response changing to gamma frequency input if you change the duration or the amplitude of the after hyperpolarization conductance? And we find that neurons with a short or a small or a short after hyperpolarization conductance will exhibit the steep dependence on gamma amplitude, similar to this profile, while neurons with a long or large amount or a long after hyperpolarization conductance will exhibit this graded response. So this suggests that the difference between these two types of cells is probably due to their after hyperpolarization conductance. So next we moved through our experimental and computational loop to figure out what the difference between these two neuronal types were. And we found that the difference were due to their time constants. So this neuron that's initially unresponsive to gamma frequency input has a really long time constant, so it's basically filtering out any sort of the fast frequency fluctuations that it would receive during gamma. Okay, so we found that the differences in neuronal responsiveness to gamma frequency input can be explained by the neuron's intrinsic properties, both the passive filtering properties of the neuron as well as the intrinsic periodicity. And we say intrinsic because these properties can actually be adjusted to suit the cortex's computational requirements. For instance, during waking states or rhythmic modes of attention or increased levels of arousal, neurons are going to receive more excitatory and more inhibitory input or more drive. And if you increase the drive to a neuron, they actually change their response to gamma frequency input. So these neurons are initially unresponsive to gamma. And as we increase the amount of drive that the neuron is receiving, this neuron becomes dependent upon gamma frequency input. And this increased dependence on gamma frequency input occurs to neurons of all neurons that are initially unresponsive, as well as a variety of other neuronal types. And this suggests that the network may be able to switch integrative modes, allowing the cortex to make moment-to-moment decisions needed to suit its computational requirements. Okay, so now and in the future, we're identifying specific targets that we can alter with genetic and viral techniques. For instance, we can alter the proteins responsible for the after-hyperpolarization conductances in neurons. And we can see how that affects the activity of an individual neuron, a whole network of neurons, or even the emergence of gamma. In this way, we can see how a particular protein or a druggable target affects the emergence of gamma oscillations. And so we can apply the same sort of iterative technique to guide the next round of experiments and get the next round of data to hypothesize about. And in this way, we can move between levels to understand emergent phenomenon like gamma frequency synchronization. Okay. And there are several people to acknowledge on this project, and these people were involved in various aspects of it. And of course, I want to thank the Kavli Foundation for funding this project.
Stephanie, this is great. What is the time course of the change in response to the gamma frequency?
Immediate.
And so how are you thinking about that? How are you presumably modulating the AHP over that time course?
So you're talking about the AHP or the increase in drive? the HP.
As you increase the drive, you said the change is immediate.
Yeah, so if you increase the drive to a neuron, basically what's happening is the neuron is decreasing in resistance because it's increasing, it's receiving an extra synaptic conductance. And so because its resistance is decreasing, the time constant of that neuron is decreasing, so it's integrating its inputs differently. And so you can think of this as happening almost instantaneously. So the neuron's going to receive this large barrage of synaptic activity, and it will basically integrate the way it's receiving other activity, including sort of this gamma frequency activity.
But I'm sorry, I'm not clear yet. So does that affect the AHP?
So the AHP is something different. So that's the difference between the other two neuronal types, the one with sort of the sigmoidal input-output relationship. And things that affect the AHP are things like dopamine and other neurotransmitters that would have a slightly longer time course.
So the rapid change, it really has nothing to do with the AHP.
The rapid change has to do with changing the time constant of the neuron, which would change the neuron from sort of this flat profile to be responsive to gamma, so the sort of graded profile.
Yes, yeah. Good.
This question comes from far away, but we've developed sort of a Drosophila model for the role of oscillations in attention-like behavior and find that dopamine has a very strong effect on regulating oscillations. Do you see neuromodulatory effects here that are somewhat that might be analogous?
Yes. So we have not directly tested this, but I can hypothesize about it because neuromodulators, including dopamine, are going to affect the overall activity of the network. When it affects the overall activity of the network, it can change the responsiveness of that neuron. And dopamine also has an impact on the after-hyperpolarization duration of neurons. So you can either increase or decrease that duration. So it could have a moment, you know, it could definitely change the way cells are integrating information. And in addition to dopamine and serotonin or norepinephrine are all going to have impacts on the way the neuron is integrating gamma frequency input.
Other questions?
Stephanie, you focus mostly on the responses to generation of gamma frequency oscillations, but you imply an interest in the generation of the oscillations. Could you say a little bit more about how you think that's happening?
Yes. So from a lot of previous studies, we have a pretty good idea that the fast-spiking parvalbumin-positive inhibitory interneurons are actually the ones that are generating this activity as far as the local circuit is concerned. So these cells really like to oscillate at gamma frequencies, and they fire at gamma frequencies. And so they synapse on the soma and cell bodies of other neuronal types. And so the reason why you see these large phasic changes in the inhibitory input to cells is probably due to the synchronized firing of that population. And the neurons with the sigmoidal input-output relationship, basically it's saying that they really like to fire at gamma. If they're given enough input, these neurons are gamma oscillators.
Good, thanks.